Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. I hope you are settled in your easy chair as we relax for the next 60 minutes and reminisce about our beautiful island of Jamaica. This is Margaret, your host, and you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. And I want to welcome my listeners online as well as the listeners calling in. And I'd like to invite the listeners online, if they want to interact with the Labrish this evening, to call us on 718-766-4558. That's our call-in number. So as most of our listeners know, we're doing an island tour. And our theme is Discover Jamaica One Parish at a Time. And boy, has it been interesting so far. Like most of us that have left Jamaica for a long time, I am very excited to be learning all these neat things about the different parishes, because we're blessed to have such wonderful, interesting facts being uncovered of things and people all over the island. And it's interesting to know that each parish had its own special story, and a lot of it is not yet told. We're just sort of touching the top of it and just picking up things here and there. But the whole island has such rich history and wonderful, interesting facts still to be discovered. So I am a history fan, and I'm just being so thrilled at all my discoveries, because I'm like a student now that I have time to really learn about my country and my culture. So again, I want to welcome 631-451, someone calling from 404-941, and another caller from 718-379 that are on the board right now, and there are quite a few listening online. So this evening, we are in our 10th week of our island tour, and we are celebrating the parish of Manchester. And I mention every week that foreigners think that Jamaica is so small that most people from Jamaica know everything about Jamaica and most sometimes know everybody from Jamaica. So anyway, I know that I have never spent any time at, perhaps in Manchester, but not the capital, which is Mandeville. And has been talked about a lot, and everyone in Kingston knows someone from Mandeville. So tonight we're going to be finding out some new things about that wonderful parish. And I want to invite our listeners online to put up your hand if you want to join the Labrish, and I will see that you hit one. I'll know that you're raising your hand if you hit one to interact with me in the backyard. So settle in your easy chair, and let me read you some facts that I gathered from Wikipedia. Oh, I see I have a raised hand. So I'm going to welcome 770-941-7570. I wonder who that could be. Hello, hello, hello. Good evening.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's my co-host. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Went to the Dominican Republic.
Oh, wow. That is great. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
And welcome to our island tour. We're doing Manchester this evening, and Manchester, for the Jamaicans, know that it's a very special place because it has a very special capital. And Donna, for the rest of the listeners who might not know who the co-host is, Donna, you want to introduce yourself?
Okay, well, I'm Donna Robinson, and actually I'm a friend of Jamaica. I'm not from Jamaica, but I've enjoyed everything that I've learned about Jamaica, and I look forward to actually visiting. And so I'm kind of going on a historical tour along with the host of our show, Miss Margaret, and who's as she calls herself, a passionate senior Jamaican. She's been away from Jamaica for a long time, but she still has that Jamaican party attitude, and as well as educational. She gets excited by education, so she kind of gave me the bug, and I've been enjoying it and enjoy, asking all the questions that show that I don't know anything.
All right. Well, you do know that we have 14 parishes,
yeah.
And this evening we're going to be celebrating the parish of Manchester. It's located in the west center of Jamaica. It's in the county of Middlesex, and its capital is Mandeville. And it's a major business center. And listen, this was an interesting fact that I learned from the research, that Mandeville is the only capital on the island that is not located on the coast or on a major river. So as I mentioned, every parish has something special about it in its geography, in its past history, and in its people. So it's really quite, I never knew that. You know, it's a little tidbit that because it's an island, you know, most of the parishes would have a capital near the water someplace. So Manchester is the only parish whose capital, Mandeville, is not located on either of those. But there's something very interesting about the names, all the names of the places in Jamaica, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Manchester was named in honor of the Duke of Manchester, the then governor of Jamaica. Now, he happened to be governor of Jamaica under the British rule for the longest time, 19 years, setting the record as the longest-serving governor of the island. Now, the town of Mandeville was established in 1816 and was named after his eldest son. But I read something in the, from one of my birthday gifts, one of my nieces in Jamaica sent me an Encyclopedia of Jamaica, which is very interesting, and it's by Olive Senior. So Jamaicans or friends of Jamaica who love history, this is a wonderful publication to get. But I wanted to tell you about something about this Duke. Now, this Duke of Manchester, who was the governor in those days, you know, back in the days, 1808 to 1828 was the time that he served. But he was described by one of the governors who came after him as his great popularity among the island's, you know, aristocrats, the planters at the time, was attributed, I'm having a little frog in my throat, please forgive me, to, this is the man describing this Manchester person, to being himself a good type, a good type of traditional Jamaican grandeur, a hard drinker, a hard rider, a reckless gambler, and a begetter of numerous brown-skinned illegitimate children. So that's how the governor after him described him and the reason for his popularity.
Oh, my goodness. Can you repeat that again?
I was just cracking up. His popularity among the island's plantocracy, they call them, you know, they're aristocrats who are planters, was attributed to him being himself a good type of traditional Jamaica grandeur, a hard drinker, a hard rider, a reckless gambler, and a begetter of numerous brown-skinned illegitimate children.
Oh, my goodness.
So you know what modern-day people would say he was doing. Well,
oh, yeah.
To be kinder, sowing his seeds.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, so he named, the parish was named after him. Now, remember, though, he was the governor of all of Jamaica.
Wow.
Right? So, quite likely that, you know, he was popular in Manchester and Mandeville and all over the island. But Jamaicans can relate to what I'm going to say now. Most Jamaicans know that people from Manchester and especially Mandeville are usually, you know, so very mixed. They're from white to light white to medium white. You know, and all of that. And now I'm saying, aha! So I thought that was quite a little tidbit. However, in the earlier talks about the different parishes, oh, I see somebody else wanting to join the Labrish. So let me open up the mic here. 718-379, you're on.
Yes, this is Leigh from the Bronx. Stay home
of
the Yankees. New York Yankees.
Don't rub it in.
I
am here with the Atlanta Braves, and I'm not very happy, so go on.
Yeah. Hi, Donna.
Hey, Leigh. How you doing?
Yeah. You came in just at the right time to hear about these wayward governors.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you know what?
He was popular, though, so he must have been...
Yeah, well, he wouldn't have been the first one to be like that. Go ahead,
yeah.
Margaret.
Well, welcome to our loyal listener from the Bronx, home of the Yankees.
Yeah.
So back as I was saying it was not, Manchester was not really a parish at the time. You know, they everything was reduced to 14 parishes, but I think they had quite a few more. But what was happening is that because of the location of this particular area of the country before it was Manchester, there was no sugar plantations in that area. It's very mountainous. But they were growing coffee, and everything was so spread out that the planters started to complain that they did not have proper representation in government. You know, politics was reigning from all the time. You know, there's some political problems or situations to be solved. So these people in all of that area were spread out, but it was interesting what they were complaining about. They didn't have church. They didn't have access to medical facilities, you know, and all of these things. So they decided to take away some of the land or the areas that belonged to some other parishes and merge them to become Manchester. And I thought that was very interesting because in November of 1814, the residents of Mile Gully, which is still the name of a place that we know, May Day, I don't know where that is, and Carpenter's Mountain petitioned the assembly to carve out a new parish and establish a town that would make that religious, judicial, and civil centers closer to them. So the petition pointed out that no parochial or public building was close to them. So in December 1914, they formed 1814. Parish. 1814, I'm sorry. And then, of course, named it gave it the governor's name, which was Manchester at the time, and then made the capital sort of in the middle of the town and gave it his son's name. Now, it never said here whether the son was a true son or, you know, one of these illegitimate.
I have a feeling it was a true son because if my memory serves me, I think this guy was made a lord.
And he was the eldest son, so I suppose.
A subsequently named lord. This is in another historical perspective.
Right.
I seem to recall that.
Right, right. And it mentioned here that slavery never took hold in that area. You know, there were not a lot of slaves in that area. And after emancipation, the newly freed slaves became independent landowners and continued to grow coffee and other crops. So they never really had any sugar and still don't have any sugar going on in that parish. Did you know that, Leigh?
Yeah, because that area isn't conducive to raising
growing the soil
sugar.
And everything
yeah.
is not conducive
Inside.
To that. But I just thought that was very interesting. It's funny how you can find things out, you know, that sort of make sense.
Well, I've got a question. You were saying that the one son was made the son was made a lord, and so you assumed that he must have been a real son. Could the illegitimate son not have been a lord, or were there certain criteria or something?
Well, I mean, to be a lord is a big thing in British circles.
I think you'd have to be a blue blood for that, definitely. And it was his first child, so I'm assuming that he came there married.
Could be, yeah.
It said here it was his eldest son.
Yeah.
That it was named after. And his name was Mandeville.
Yeah.
So anyway, Manchester was formed in 1814 by this special House of Assembly, you know, because of all these complaints. Now, it says here that the Irish potato was first introduced to Jamaica at Bethany, a town in the parish. I didn't know that. Did you know that, Leigh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You see, you are a history buff, and you know a lot more than I do. Citrus also became an important crop in 1920. The fruit, Ortenique, a cross between an orange and a tangerine, was developed by Charles Jackson. Now, I don't know if Americans know what an Ortenique is.
Yeah, well, you see that. I don't know if you see them in your supermarkets in Atlanta,
uh-huh.
but we do here. And from, you know, when it's in season, we see it in Pathmark.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it called an Ortenique?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Oh, Donna, have you ever seen a fruit called an Ortenique here in the South?
I can't say that I don't know, because you know that farmers market, the Cap Farmers Market, has a lot of fruits, and there's so many that I haven't seen before, so I really have no earthly idea.
Well,
right, right. I just wondered, because I wondered if it was something unique to that part of the, or they have it in Mexico and other places too. I don't
know. No, because I think it's unique to Jamaica.
Let's
put it this way. It was then, you know, maybe it's not anymore. You could find it like in Mexico, as you say.
Right.
Because
I remember when I was young and used to travel back and forth to the country, there was a lot of what they call grafting going on with fruits and plants. Are you familiar with that, Leigh?
Yes, because my father used to do a lot of grafting.
Now, Donna, are you familiar with the term grafting?
Well, I assume that's like where your cross section, you know, section.
Right.
Exactly right.
You try to cross one thing, or you marry them or have them
marry them.
Have intercourse or something.
No. Listen, don't get carried away with the governor there. Just let's go back to that Dardanique for a second. With Donna, the way you recognize it, it looks like an orange. Usually it's even when it's
oh yes, you're right. But it's bigger than a tangerine.
Yes, and it's sort of greener, even though it's mature. You know, it's not, it doesn't have the color of your regular orange.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a greener sort of thing.
Oh, it's green.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And but you can open it up just like a tangerine, yeah, by puncturing the underside of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but
and the taste is kind of like the tangerine or orange or
yeah, it's very citrusy, and when it's sweet, but when it's sour, it's sour.
Oh.
Yeah.
An extreme thing.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting because they say Manchester, even today, produces much of Jamaica's Irish potato crop, as well as citrus, cattle, and ground provision. Now, let me ask you something, Leigh, because you might know more about this than me. Is there a difference between the Irish potato and, let's say, the russet potato here?
Well, yes, because, you know, the what we call the Irish potato in Jamaica, if I remember, the skin is very thin,
mm-hmm.
and you wouldn't want to bake an Irish potato instead of it's in other words, it's better to boil an Irish potato.
Oh, okay. So it's not really, even in the shape, it's smaller.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that was imported or came from Ireland someplace. Is that why Irish potato?
Well, yeah. People brought. I read that only yesterday. That
interesting.
Who brought it? I think I had a notation how it came to the island, but I can't find it now. But in the travels of these. People coming from Great Britain and Ireland and so forth. It didn't necessarily come from Ireland to get that name, but we gave it the name Irish potato, and it stuck over the ages, you know. But it came from somewhere.
I was looking on here, and it says that it talks about the potato has a single origin in the area of southern Peru. Although Peru is essentially the birthplace of the potato, today over 99% of all cultivated potatoes worldwide are descendants or subspecies indigenous to south central Chile.
That's interesting.
And you Googled Irish potato?
Yeah, I Googled Irish potato, and then it just, you know, brings you all information about the potatoes, and it talks about the bear. But what they did was it says that they based their historical record
local agriculturalist and DNA analysis, and so that's where they came up with the most widely cultivated variety worldwide, coming from somewhere in central Chile.
And that's definitely a far away from Ireland, and it's a far away even from Jamaica. And they and notice they're not calling it a Chilean potato. They still call it an Irish potato, right?
Especially if an Irish person brought it to Jamaica.
No, and I don't think it's necessarily an Irish person.
Oh, I got
you.
Because it said that, you know, the potato wasn't introduced in Europe until 1537. And then they began to transport it throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it says, now there are well over 100 varieties might be found in a single valley, and a dozen or more might be maintained by a single agricultural household. And all, but it talks about the plague and everything, the disease that happened as a result
happened in
of
Ireland. Yeah, there was a big Irish plague in Ireland. And then following that was a potato famine.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Now, I just want to read a little bit about Mandeville.
Yeah.
Because I happen to have a friend here in Atlanta who is from Manchester. I have never spent any time in Mandeville, but have driven through.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always known that it's known for its wonderful climate. Have you spent any time there, Leo? If any
yes,
of our listeners have spent any time in Mandeville, would like to have you join the Labrish.
Well, when I was about 9, I was sent up for summer vacation to Manchester.
Uh-huh.
And it was quite an interesting thing for a little boy at 9, because no sooner did I arrive there that they had an electrical storm. The people I spent time with they had a tremendous spread of land,
mm-hmm.
and they grew. They had cattle,
mm-hmm.
and I'm gonna tell you just a quick story on what happened. The electrical storm apparently happened just maybe 15 minutes or so before we arrived, and it struck the maid, and she was paralyzed for about 20 minutes.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, and then she started to talk. After I remember this as if it were yesterday.
Wow!
After she started to talk, and she was, you know, pronounced well, I took off and I was roaming through the commons. This is the place where they grow different things.
Uh-huh.
And the big spread. And I saw a huge, probably to this day, it's the hugest cow that I'd ever seen, a white cow with horns, dead on the ground.
So it must have struck him too.
Struck him too. And
wow.
So from that time until now, I'm not bashful to say that I really don't like lightning.
Well, you know, I had a similar experience, but I don't remember what parish it was.
Yeah.
You know, my father was a minister at one time. So I had gone to some church in the country, and I remember being in the building and seeing a lightning strike a tree outside, and the tree fell and caught fire. And I don't think I was more than 9 or 10 like you. And to this day, I remember it just as if it was yesterday. It's funny how what a traumatic experience can do to you. And I'm scared of lightning too. So.
Yeah. Well, I think we better move on. I don't want to talk about lightning.
Right. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about Mandeville, because I was telling you about this girlfriend I have here who's from Manchester. I'm not sure if she's from Mandeville. I forgot to ask her that. She's calling in. I hope she'll raise her hands. Anyway, I asked her what she considered the best feature of, I think it was Mandeville or Manchester. It must have been Mandeville. And she told me the weather. that the weather was so beautiful all year round.
What river?
The weather, the climate.
Yes, I can attest to that.
Yes, the climate. She said it was the most even and tempered climate of the whole entire island.
This is true.
And I remember when we were driving through, you know, whenever I was driving through Mandeville, you always wanted to stop, you know what I mean, to get out of the car so you could breathe the air or something, you know?
Yes, it attracted a lot of Europeans to live there in Mandeville.
Because
of the climate. And in fact, you know, the certain sections of Mandeville is elevated to about 2,000 feet above sea level. So
right, right.
It gets it's constantly cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I can remember watching a ball game down, a football game, you know, soccer to Americans, who I was watching the game and I sort of squatted down. And when I was ready to get up, to stand up, my glands were like seized up, you know, the glands.
Because of the thinness of the
air? Yeah, because it was so cool.
Ah.
And you were in one position. I mean, that may be just unique to me because I just didn't like cold.
Uh-huh.
And it was really cold. But
right.
I remember that, and it was one of the best games that St. George's ever played in a competition. It was we played Monroe and beat Monroe 1-0, and to this day it was
a record,
deal.
Huh?
Yeah.
But you know, a perfect climate will always make your body perform better. But to give you the correct sea level, it's here the highest point is 2,770 feet above sea level in the Carpenter's Mountain.
Okay.
So that's where Mandeville is located. Anyway, it's funny. It's bordered by St. Elizabeth,
mm-hmm.
which we're going to do next in the west, Clarendon, which we did last week, I think, in the east, and Trelawney in the north. So you know, Manchester is the sixth largest parish in Jamaica. So it has three mountain ranges. It's the Carpenter's Mountain, the Mayday Mountains. Have you ever heard of that? Mayday, two separate words.
No, I didn't. When I did some research, I wasn't familiar with the names that they give for the mountains. All I know is that we used to go up hills that we call, you know, Mount Diablo or whatever.
We go over that to get
over
to Mandeville. I know that.
Yeah.
Hmm? And the third mountain is Don Figaro Mountains. So we have the Carpenter's Mountain, the Mayday Mountains, and so it's very mountainous, in other words. But Mandeville itself is on the first one, the Carpenter's Mountain. Now, over 90% of the parish's surface is limestone. So there is an abundance of cockpit sinkholes and caves and underground passages near Christiana. Now, I've always heard of Christiana, and I don't know if I've ever passed through it, but,
yeah,
you know, being a very nice place to live.
You probably had to pass through Christiana. It's like on the main drag going anywhere towards St. Elizabeth and Westmoreland.
Right, but this particular cave near Christiana is
the
longest because it's over there are over 100 caves in that parish. As well as it has one of the longest known cave in Jamaica, and it's the Smoky Hole Cave in Cross Keys. It is the deepest known cave on the island. The deepest known cave on the island is Oxford Cave. And let me just tell you, I was reading, doing another parish, and do you know there are cave discoverers all over the world, and the ones I was reading about is in Belgium, I think, that go to Jamaica on exhibitions to find and document some of these caves.
Right.
Did you? Up to recently, I saw where someone was blogging about, you know, planning an exhibition to some part of the island to go explore some caves.
Yeah, because in caves, it's amazing what you might find in caves. But what you find in most caves are stalactites and stalagmites.
Mm-hmm.
And they vary in composition, too. So I guess if you're into caves, you must want to analyze what's down there. And another thing about caves, you find bats. You know,
oh, yes, these
really?
Are they considered extinct.
No, they're not extinct.
Oh, no, they did consider them before they found some of them in some of these caves.
Yeah.
They thought they were extinct.
People used to be, I know Jamaicans used to be afraid of bats.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
There was a lot of superstition
but just
about
one
that.
One other thing that I wanted to mention that I observed while I was there was that there was no running water. You know, we people from Kingston, like we are, would be ready to run to the shower and to the pipes.
Uh-huh.
There was no running water.
At the time.
I imagine that is history now, but...
Right.
In those days, they would have a huge cistern to collect water.
Uh-huh.
Rainwater.
Uh-huh.
And that would have to last them for
the
next rainy season.
Right.
The other thing that I observe, you know, that section was big in coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So the people that I stayed with had a big terrace.
Mm-hmm.
That dried the coffee for us.
Right, I remember passing and seeing those. Called, there's a name for that.
Yes, I couldn't remember them.
Built on a slant.
Yes.
And I think as the coffee dried or something, it moved and fell further down or something. It has something.
Well they haven't figured out how long it was going to stay in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, how it should... the length of time it should stay out there, and then they would either take the coffee beans after that to market, or if they were into grinding it, they would, you know.
Right.
But it was a whole process. The other thing, the last thing that I'm remembering is that they had hogs, you know,
mm-hmm.
huge pigs, and they would slaughter them and take them to market. Now, since I was there and I was a young boy, they didn't want me to go through the trauma of
seeing it. Yeah,
but,
I went through that too.
Yeah, but they live. Let me tell you, if a hog makes such a horrible noise that there's no way that I wouldn't, number one, wake up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was up to me whether I wanted to go and observe, you know. Well,
mm-hmm.
I didn't, so.
Now, did that property have a busher?
I don't know, but it's likely because, you know, they had horses to go down. Well, I might mention that, have you ever seen a pimento tree?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing when you go into the section that grew the pimento trees. It smelled like like a huge place where a kitchen or something like that. You
right,
know?
Right. It smelled like food cooking.
Yes.
Uh huh. Well, and Donna, that is what is called allspice.
Oh.
We don't know it as we didn't know it. I didn't know it was called allspice until I came here because we are very. Familiar with pimento. But the interesting thing I found lay that when I was growing up and up to when I left Jamaica, I think that most in my head, because, you know, we didn't cook, we didn't go to the kitchen. Anyway, I thought that pimento was only used in, like, in things like rice and peas and the meats and things like that. But here they use it in sweet stuff, like making a cake and things, and to season other things. And I suppose that's why it's called allspice.
Wow.
Because they can, you can put it in different things.
Yeah, well, in what's that country that the West Indian island that's called the Spice Island? The name of it.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Yes, when you get off, like you go on a cruise and you get off the docks, you
mm-hmm.
smell that. You get that aroma because the whole island is all spice.
Ah,
you know?
I see.
Yeah. And also, did you notice that there was a pica pepper factory somewhere in Mandeville?
No, I didn't know that. You mean the famous pica pepper sauce that we know?
Famous, yes.
The original,
because this has been...
Oh, yes, I remember seeing that on the bottle. It's being, as they call it, outsourced now.
Yeah.
But I want to go back a little in the history and tell you that I found this very interesting, because in 1792, a surveyor found two carvings believed to be of the Arawak Indians, we were discussing this earlier today, in a cave in that same Carpenter's Mountain in 1792. And, of course, they shipped it. It is on display as we speak in the British Museum. Did you know that?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Did you happen to see it when you go there?
I don't remember if I looked at it, because the British Museum is a huge place, and you get bogged down with all of these skeletons and things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice that there was this.
But you were aware of it when you went there?
Yes, I was.
Ah, I see. Okay. Now, Mandeville is noted for a couple of things. You know, first of all, many of Jamaica's businesses were started in Mandeville, I mean, from way back. And it is the home of one of the oldest hotels in the Caribbean. You know, a hotel was there before it was in Kingston.
Right.
And this, it began its operations in 1875. Now, also, the first free library on the island was started in Mandeville in 1938, and it's the oldest parish library. That's something that was new to me. Now, it is also the home of the birthplace of one of my favorite politicians, and that is the right excellent Norman Washington Manley. He was born there. I didn't even know that. I knew him, you know, from Kingston. And if you live in Kingston and you were born and raised in Kingston, you would think that everybody that was anybody was born in Kingston. Right, Lee? As a matter of fact, there would be people when you're young, you know, like young people coming from different parts of the different other parishes, Donna, that would perhaps say they're from Kingston just because Kingston was the place to be from. So in my limited thinking, I figured that Norman Manley must have been born and raised in Kingston. But he was actually born not in Mandeville, in another town, but in Manchester. So, and where, you know where he went to school, Dave?
I don't remember.
Kingston College.
Oh, well, maybe that's why I don't know.
Right, because everybody said everybody went to St. George's, right?
Well, not really.
Just being facetious.
Jamaica College would contend all of this as well, and Kingston College it really is an upstart. Because
wait, I hope I'm saying the right college here, because it could be JC. You know, they, oh, the JC and KC are close.
I think you're right, but I won't even go there because...
Well, I just want to share with you all something that I found to be pretty interesting, that there was another person that was born there in Mandeville, Charmaine Crooks.
Mm-hmm.
She was born in 1962, but think about it, what's interesting
19
what? Is that in 1962.
That's the year of independence, so we would know her.
But she moved to Canada. She became a Canadian athlete, and she won the Summer Olympics for Canada starting in 84. But what's interesting is that her last appearance was right here in Atlanta, Georgia, and she carried the flag during the opening ceremony for the Olympics that we had here. So I thought that was pretty cool.
So she carried it for Jamaica or for Canada?
Canada.
Oh, I see. Yeah, we have a lot of our people who might have been – born in Jamaica, but you know they went to wherever they went to so young that they're more or less citizens of that country. So I did know that, and she was born on the birth year of independence. So that's quite interesting. Anyway, a lot of the older people or the seniors of Jamaica can really relate to. Norman Washington Manley, his son, you know, was a politician too. And as a matter of fact, Donna, his son was the husband to Beverly Manley, who was our guest on the show earlier last August. So we're very familiar with that family. But you know, did you know that he served in the war in England, Lay, I was reading that about him. You know, when you know, I knew him as a politician and didn't know much about his younger years, you know, when he...
I mean, his parents, you know, they... His father, they met in England, right?
Yes, yes.
His mother was English, and I think he did his early... schooling in England.
Right, right.
And a small wonder that he joined up. Because
well, actually, it says here that he was born in Roxborough, but it doesn't say if it was, it was in the parish of Manchester.
Yeah. Yeah, I read that.
He was born in 1893 and passed away in 1969.
Correct.
But he was a Rhodes Scholar and went to Oxford and studied law. And then he became a barrister, which is called a King's Counsel, in 1932. So, and there's a very handsome picture of him as a young man, and more or less the man I know.
Wasn't he a big athlete as well?
Yes, yes. They say here that he was an athlete when he went to school in Jamaica.
Yeah. Right.
So he was quite a man.
He was a sculptor.
Mm-hmm. His wife was a... She was a sculptor, too? I thought his wife was.
Maybe his wife.
Yes, his wife was. Because, you know, they... And, of course, he has several buildings at the university and highways and all of that named after him. And... But another interesting tidbit about that area... Second of all, I want to remind our listeners, we get carried away when we're labrishing here, so we forget to identify ourselves. This is Margaret, and you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here once a week on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock to labrish about different things, mostly to celebrate and reminisce about our beautiful island of Jamaica and what the culture used to be when we grew up or even before that time, because... my famous fan from New York and quite a few of our listeners and myself are not that familiar with the new Jamaica since independence, but we know a lot about the old Jamaica when we were growing up. So we're trying to capture some of those stories, and I'm even going back way back to things that I never knew about or were not in my consciousness. Let's say perhaps I learned about them and didn't retain it. But I'm having a wonderful time just researching and finding out all these neat little tidbits about various parts of the island.
Do you have anybody showing their hands that's from Mandeville, Manchester?
Not so far. You know, we have listeners, but they don't like to show their hands. I'm hoping that they'll eventually warm up. But I want to give you a little tidbit. I told you about the Mandeville Hotel being a landmark.
A person that used to be a member of our family, but not really a member, Aunt Rosalind, worked at that hotel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
I think she retired from that hotel. It was.
I didn't know that. Now, where was she born?
I don't know where she was born, but all I know is that she was she worked there for quite some time, and she.
But if she retired from there, I'm sure. Well, I'm thinking that she might have been born here. But it says here that the Mandeville Hotel, the building apparently was originally the barracks when Mandeville was a garrison for the English troops. Many of these soldiers died in a yellow fever outbreak and was buried in the eastern part of the parish churchyard in 1890. Now, after the garrison was departed, the building became a hotel called the Waverley. It says here, when Miss Jane Brooks took over in 1898, it became Brooks Hotel and finally was known as the Mandeville Hotel. It became the center of social life for British retirees in Manchester, as well as for white Jamaicans from the area during the first half of the 20th century. An unwritten color bar existed for years, enforced by various people whose keen training for genetic markers could allegedly pick out any newcomer of dubious origin. Isn't that something?
That is something.
If they were
right there in Jamaica, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right there in Jamaica.
Right. Unbelievable. But now, the Mandeville Jail and Workhouse. When I saw that word, it flashed back in my memory. I remember, I don't know, you would listen to plays or whatever, and they would say the person is in the workhouse. And that really meant the jail.
Right.
Or the prison, because in those days, the prisoners used to work out on the roads.
Yeah.
I remember seeing them.
They're
talking about here, but in my day.
When you were pronounced a sentence at hard labor, in those days it meant a hard labor. You didn't have televisions and all of that to watch in the afternoons.
And internet.
You get out there and chop some hills down or something.
Right, and as last week we talked about the maca. You got out there and chopped down some maca. But let's talk about
Does Zana know what a maca is?
Well, I explained it last week because there was a very colorful description of getting to the Milk River Bath from an old piece that was written by someone in 18-something that was trying to get to the bath.
Okay.
And they would say these high, thorny things would almost slap them in the face if they had to pull over. So I explained what a maca is. But I want to tell you a little bit about the Manchester Parish Church. It was an Anglican church in Mandeville. The parish was opened its doors in 1820. The chapel and the other parts of the tower were added later, but that's not important. For many years, this was the only church in the parish, and the only one church in the whole parish. But the interesting thing is about the rector of the church. His name was Reverend Bridges. Now, in the slave rebellion of 1832, the original organ loft was used as a jail. Nonconformist missionaries were believed by the authorities to be implicated in the rebellion, and many of them were arrested during, you know, this rebellion. Now, this particular Moravian minister was locked up in the organ because they didn't have enough space in the jail. So I suppose because he was a man of the cloth, they lock him up in his own church.
Well, don't forget that the only accredited church then probably was the Anglican Church, because it was the Church of England.
Right. But, and you know, they were a lot of the missionaries.
Yeah, like in 1754, the Moravian missionaries arrived, you know.
Right. And actually, it was not his church, but in a church is what I mean. It's the Moravian minister that they locked up in the church.
Right.
The Mandeville jail was full. So this particular man was locked up in the organ loft.
Because he was Moravian, not Anglican.
Right. In the meantime, a sympathetic person galloped all over the parish collecting character witnesses on his behalf, and they were rushed to the trial in time to secure his acquittal, because they were accusing him of being involved in the rebellion. You know, this is in 1832. So I thought that was an interesting little tidbit for that particular period. But another thing that I thought was quite interesting is some of the developments that have taken place in Mandeville. This is almost all some of it more recent, because it really sort of came into its own as a tourist attraction. You know, they're encouraging tourism sort of on a small basis. Now, do you know they have these groups that you can go and actually interact with a family or a group that have like interests, like bird watching or, you know, cave exploring or something like that? You can actually make that arrangement. However, I wanted to tell you a little bit about how some of that came into being, because there are a couple of famous people that have been made famous, I suppose, because of it. I don't know if you might be familiar with any of these names, but it says it's called community tourism. It was developed and pioneered by Diana McIntyre Pike, of the Astra Country Inn in Mandeville, and Desmond Henry, a marketing and communication specialist from the South Coast. Together, they synthesized communities in the central and south area and created the first non-government organization for community tourism. The Central and South Tourism Organization, it's called CESTO. In 1987, this was done. Since then, a company called Country Style emerged to market and develop sustainable tourism throughout the Caribbean, not just in Jamaica. Country Style successfully spearheaded the first sustainable tourism conference in Jamaica and the Caribbean, which is where it was decided to establish an institute for sustainable tourism based on this Astra Court in Mandeville. I mean, based on their, you know, format. Are you familiar with any of that, Lane?
Well, I read it. I don't know the mechanics of it, but I read it when I was looking at some of the data on Mandeville.
Right. I thought it was very interesting because, you know, because it's not near the sea like most of the other places, and it's not near a river, you would think that there is not much attraction, you know, because a lot of people come to Jamaica, tourists, foreigners, for the beach, you know, the sun and some sort of that kind of activity. And because that is mountainous, so I just thought it was very creative because they do have this beautiful weather all year round, and they do have the mountains with, which would be conducive to birds, you know, the special birds that we have out there, so to bird watching and that kind of thing. So, again, I'm just saying when people have a passion and they can use the tools that they have around them, because here these people are sort of designing the tourism, sustainable tourism, to suit the environment that they have. And I thought that was very clever to come up with an idea like that. And apparently it's taking hold and it is successful. They said, first of all, Mandeville has very fertile land and is known as the breadbasket in the island. What is plentiful there and what they're promoting is natural health cuisines, natural tours and walks, organic farming, and a healthy lifestyle is normal in this mountainous area. The potential for health and fitness tourism is tremendous, and especially with a cooler and more refreshing climate. Recreational activities are golf, tennis, squash at the historic Manchester Club, which boasts of having the first golf course in the Caribbean. They have badminton, horseback riding, bird watching, and more. So if you like, you know, as for groups that would like, I suppose, horseback riding in the mountains or on the mountainous terrain, you know, that could be sort of quite an adventurous type of trip or something different from wherever they're coming from. So they're using some of these things because they don't have the white sands, you know, and the rafting on the river, the Rio Grande, like they have in some other places, to attract tourism. So it brings me back to the fact, you know, that you work with what you have to get what you want. So I just thought I would give them a plug here and celebrate them because, you know, like I tell most of my listeners now and ones that might come by later and download the show, we're here in the backyard lavishing, not about politics, not about what's right and wrong, not about, you know, we are here to encourage the young people to be proud of who they are, no matter where they are, and especially if they're Jamaicans, Jamaicans, or from any type of culture anyhow, that there's rich history in your past and a lot to be celebrated. So let's not just dwell on all the negative things that might have happened in the past and that are happening now, but draw strength from the important things and the important people and events that moved forward. Because, you know, even in the days when there was persecution, you know, blatant between races and classes, there were people on the supposedly class that was the dominant one. There were people on that side that was for the people, the downtrodden. So there's always people on both sides of any issue. So no matter what side anyone find themselves in, you know, they need to reach out and do something positive and move life and move cultures and move countries and economies forward instead of standing still and complaining or moving backwards, because that's what happens when we do that. So we in the backyard, we gather in the backyard every week to celebrate, inform, and lavish. Right, Leigh?
Right. One thing that we should mention is that the economy in Manchester, Mandeville in particular, was on a higher level than in the rest of the island, only because of the bauxite mining that took place in the early 80s, I think it was. I don't quite remember the year that the mining started, but we collaborated with Alcan Aluminum to get the aluminum ore mined, and we hired a lot of Jamaican engineers and paid them well. And in fact, these people made a very good living as compared with the average wage scales of the island as a whole.
Right, even the capital of Kingston.
Even the capital of Kingston.
But you know, it's funny because according to my research here, the affluence even went beyond that. Because remember, I read here that because there were not a lot of slaves there, and those that were there were doing coffee. After him, and of course, you know, the guys were moving around quite speedily.
Yeah.
A lot of the people there got land from their fathers, even though they were illegitimate children, and some of the actual slaves, because they were all over Jamaica, the slaves were allowed to plant for themselves and feed themselves. So they got that land afterwards. It was willed to them.
Yes.
They were able to take the land, the coffee, the land with the coffee and things, it says here, became their own.
Yes. Well, you know, going back a little bit in history, at the emancipation from slavery, they had established laws that allowed the people, not only the planters, the owners of land, but there were some lands that became, there was a need to cultivate the land, in other words. So they apportioned some of these lands to natives and even slaves.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, people would develop their lands into farms and rear cattle and this, that, and the other. And they would become landowners themselves.
Right, right. Because it says here, after emancipation, the newly freed slaves became independent land settlers.
Oh, there you go.
Continued to grow coffee and other crops.
Yes.
And this is particularly talking about Manchester.
Right.
So my point is, even before the bauxite was discovered, there were families, you know, and descendants of families who owned large lots of property.
Right, right.
And were successful because, you know, they got a start. But I remember, you know, when teenagers and all that, you always thought about people from Mandeville as being sort of almost like you would think of people from Boston here, like the New Englanders.
Yeah.
You know, that was the general feeling, and they were always from mostly wealthy families.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting when I read all of this history to know what happened, you know, in 18 whatever. So it's sort of tying it together in this concept is the same thing as when we had a guest on who had lived all over, and one of the places Annette, she lived, was Moko. And I was telling our listeners how, I don't know for the people in the country, but in Kingston, when you thought of someone from Moko, you thought they were not as educated, as not as intelligent, you know, and whatever.
It's under the sound of that name. You know, and my place in Trelawney, I had a fellow that was from Muckle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was, you know, to my mind, I was thinking the same thing. You just
right. He can't have any sense.
Yeah.
He comes from Muckle. And as a matter of fact, when you want to downgrade a person, I suppose, or dog him or whatever they call it here, you tell him that he come from Muckle.
Yeah.
You know, go where you come from, Muckle.
Or
you're going on as if you come from Muckle. If you are being stupid, you are saying something silly, somebody might think to you that you're going on like you come from Muckle. Oh, where you come from, Muckle? Because you don't understand what I'm saying. You're at my level. So,
it's the connotation of
people.
The name of the place, you know.
Huh?
The name of the place lends to this kind of...
Right. But it was interesting because our guest at that time, she had one of the reasons I had her on the show is because she had lived all over Jamaica, unlike most people. She had actually living knowledge of several different states. I call it states, parishes, I mean. So because her aunt and uncle, who she grew up with, were teachers, and they would move from place to place as the need, as they were needed, because they were like head people of the schools.
Yeah, I met a woman like that only last week in Maryland. And
really? And Muckle was one of the places they were assigned. So apparently there was a need for a great teacher, or somebody to help a school in Muckle. So, but I'm sure there are quite a few smart people from Muckle. But in my day, if you were from Muckle, you didn't say so.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, this woman, she knew so much about Jamaica. And what was really neat about her, she has on the tip of her tongue all of these things that only Jamaicans say.
But, Leigh, did you happen to get her number so we can have her on the show one of these days?
I told her about it, and I'm sure I'll be. I forget where she was from. She lived near, coincidentally, she lived near where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
And
you mean in Kingston?
In Kingston, but she...
Uh-huh.
She knew all about the different parishes, and she could quote different things in Jamaican folklore.
She's the person I'd like to talk to. I want to just tell my listeners and you, Donna, that might not be familiar. They were saying like you do in the South here, you know, but America is so big compared to Jamaica that you don't think that it goes on in Jamaica too, but there might be a saying in one part of the island that is not understood in another part of the island. You know, you just don't have a clue, perhaps, what it means.
Right.
So, but you know, when you look at it on the map as compared to, you know, even South America, it's just a dot. So people believe that, you know, that is almost, they can't wrap their minds around the fact that everybody on the island are not doing the same thing, don't have the same customs, you know, but it's totally different. And another thing that contributes to that is the racial mix, because there are so many different customs that were introduced because of the origin of the, you know, the parents before them.
Mm.
So it's really quite interesting.
Well, I just want to share with you all that, you know, I got kind of curious about this Duke, you know, situation. And
that Duke again.
Sowing his seed. His oats, not seeds, oats.
But I looked at...
What do you got, Donna?
Looked up the William Montague was the fifth Duke of Manchester, and he was the one that actually became the governor. But then I looked at it, they had a whole history of, I mean, it's like they started out as earls, and then Charles Montague became the first Duke of Manchester, like in 1719, and it went all the way down to the fifth Duke, which was William Montague, and he's the one that that actually he only had one son. He had
legitimate son.
Yeah. But here's the thing that's interesting. Well, first of all, there were like four girls and one son. But the thing about it, which was interesting, is when I read information about him, he left England, and he said his marriage was unhappy, and he had separated before he left for Jamaica.
Ah, no wonder he was sowing his oats.
And he was considered very handsome.
Ooh.
And so he didn't return to England until 1827.
He must have been worn out.
I know, but it talks about a lot of the things that he did, how he attempted to reform the Jamaican postal service and courts. Free blacks were allowed as witnesses, but couldn't hold office at the time. And he had to deal with the destruction and fire of Port Royal and the plantations by hurricane. And because of his personal influence, when he pacified the slaves and calmed them during the Barbados Revolt, that really helped him with, you know, his popularity.
Right.
It says in 1820, last years in office, they were dominated by preparing for the emancipation of slaves, which apparently was very difficult due to resistance of planters. And
huh?
So they had issues that they had to include, which included forbidding the carrying of whips and exempting women from flogging. And also, I guess he kind of came in there with his new children and decided he...
You don't want them whipped.
So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, isn't it interesting when you can go from one? That's what I've been doing. I tell my listeners, and I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Lavish on Blog Talk Radio, and we're here each Wednesday. And if you want to talk to us, call 718-766-4558 and hit 1 on your telephone. And we'd be happy to include you in the labyrinth.
Wait a minute. I wanted to tell you something else, too, which was really weird, which was interesting to me, is that after the sixth Duke, the seventh Duke had three names, the eighth Duke had four names, and then they just kept increasing, five names.
You mean actual names before it came to the last name?
George Victor Drogo Montague, William.
Oh, for God's sake.
George Francis Drogo Montague.
Oh, I got you, yeah.
And the last one, it says the heir apparent is the present holder's only son. His name is Alexander Michael Charles David Francis George Edward William Kimball Drogo Montague.
Okay.
Born in 1993 and living in California.
Really? 1993?
Yeah.
Goodness.
That's all the way down past the 13th Duke of Manchester. So the heir apparent would be that young man born in 1993.
Yeah, interesting. Very, very interesting. But anyway, I hope everybody has enjoyed the labyrinth. And next week, I think we'll be doing Trelawney. I'm not sure. I have them lined up ready. But there's always just so much about any one parish. You know, we really never really cover it all. But we're just picking out some things that some of our listeners might not be very familiar with and they might find interesting. And we hope you do. And we ask you to go by our website, www.backyardlavish.com, and leave us a comment, or better yet, join our community. It's free, and it operates just like Facebook, and it's quite safe, so we ask you to become part of our community. And with that said, I wanted to really mention that I know personally that Mandeville, I think it's in Mandeville, or some part of Manchester, has a very prestigious school that has produced a lot of present-day graduates that have gone on to do, you know, wonderful things, and that's Manchester High. And they have, I think they have an association and an alumni that's quite active. But I got an email just last week, I think, of a young man from who graduated from Manchester High, who got a scholarship to Yale. And Yale was not the only school, and he has several others that he had scholarships to. I think he selected Yale. But I thought that was quite interesting. I mean, this is present day today, you know, that this is happening. But I know that there's been, there are quite a lot of people here in the diaspora and all over the world that are graduates from Manchester High. So I want to mention to our listeners that every parish is special, and we like to do some special things about promoting it for its history, its past, and things that are going on presently. So I think one of the things that Manchester is known for to lay, and we're going to do a season on birds too, you know, I'm trying to segment things so we can have listeners that might have a special interest to be able to go to one of our shows and get some information about that. But this, for the next couple of few weeks, we're going to be continuing our island tour and trying to get some information about one of our 14 parishes that you might find interesting. So with that said, Mr. Lay, do you have some parting words for our segment this evening?
Not really. What parish are you covering next week?
I can look on my, just a minute. I think it will be Trelawney. What do you have it up, Donna? I've listed all of them on the website, on the Blog Talk site. I think it's Trelawney.
I'm not on the site, so I don't know.
No,
but,
I'm not on there either.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's Trelawney that we're doing. So what we have left, this is our 10th. We have 11, 12, 13, 14. We have four parishes left.
Yes, and I know for a fact there are lots of people that I know from Trelawney. So
let's hear from them next
week.
Uh-huh. I hope that some of them will come on and give us some little gem about the parish that they were born in or grew up in or, you know, have some affiliation with. Because, you know, that personal touch always makes it special. And another thing is, no, I'm sorry, the parish we'll be doing next week is Hanover.
Okay. That's
we'll be doing Hanover next week, then St. James after that, then Trelawney, St. Elizabeth, and I'm leaving the best for last. We're going to be doing Westmoreland. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks left.
Okay.
So with that said, do we have any parting words from our co-host?
Well, just hope that everybody goes to backyardlovers.com and maybe leave some of these things for us to talk about. That would be really fun. Always interesting hearing the various different sayings and slogans that are used. I really enjoy that. But outside of that, just have yourself a great week and look forward to next week.
Yes, and I want to say that I met with a couple that lived in England and then here and retired. And they selected Mandeville to live, and they told me, and I just visited with them this past week, and they told me how wonderful the weather is and how much they're enjoying it. There's also a big, I think it's a seven-day Adventist university there. Did you know that, Lake?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it was a teacher's college, I think, and then it's now a university. But it seemed to be quite vibrant, and, you know, there's a big section of people. They're a large group of people now that are coming, retirees from all over, and they mentioned to me that there are some foreigners that are retiring there, people from Belgium and Germany.
Yeah.
that are settling into, as a matter of fact, they just moved to a new subdivision, and they say there were quite a few foreigners who are retirees, not tourists.
Yeah.
You know, they're purchasing property and settling in and actually, you know, retiring in that.
You know, I don't know. Of course, you know, like I said, I haven't been to Jamaica, but I just got back from Dominican Republic. And, you know, one of the things that was said was the guy that was like our tour guide says, okay, now you're here, and so you need to leave all your stress behind. And remember, we do not operate on the same sense of urgency that you do. So just relax and take a deep breath. And I think that really kind of sets the tone for how you feel when you get on the island and how the people are just, I just had a great time. It was so relaxing, and there was no hurry to do anything, and it was just so nice. And I think that a lot of people, you know, once they get in that environment, you know, I can see how people actually say, okay, well, you know what, I think I'm ready to move. There were actual people sitting down figuring out, okay, now how much would it take for me to actually live here for, you know, each year?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I can tell you, even though the American economy might be down in a lot of places, their dollar is up, because it takes a lot of whatever that country's currency is to buy an American dollar, as it is in Jamaica. You know,
like
it takes a lot of Jamaican dollars to buy one U.S. dollar.
Yeah,
so you think of people retiring. Big pardon?
37 to 1.
Yes, so if you think of someone retiring here and getting, you know, an American or a Jamaican who has become a citizen or whatever, if they're getting their retirement in U.S. dollars, then, you know, it can do a lot more than perhaps if they retired here.
Right.
Then they have the pleasure of being on I once heard it described as the island being one big tranquilizer. You know, you step off the plane and it's no problem, man.
Well, just one other observation that more in the religious vein. In 1955, the then Bishop of Jamaica, Roman Catholic Bishop of Jamaica, got approval for a second, what you would call like a parish. You know, the Bishop of Kingston was like the Bishop of Jamaica in the past, and so they got approval to have another bishop in Manchester. And his he extended across the boundaries there that you mentioned earlier, St. Elizabeth and Mandeville. It's still true today that they have.
I guess the one thing I was wondering about was, you know, I know that they got all those complaints or whatever from the farmers and stuff, but I just thought it was interesting that they would put their capital so far away from the water as opposed to, you know, a lot of the other places being close to sea.
But they put it in the best place of what they had. You know what I mean? They apparently, some of those other parishes that were already established had their own capital on the water or the sea, and it's very mountainous.
Well, don't forget, Donna, Manchester is a landlocked parish. That's the only parish that isn't
not on the ocean.
On the ocean, so therefore,
right.
So therefore,
oh,
they,
it looks like when I looked at the map, it looked like it had a piece of ocean. I mean, it had ocean view or something.
It looks like on a map. I know that, but
wow.
It's not bounded by sea or a river, most of the other
right.
Barriers.
You perhaps have a view, but even if there's a sea, a beach, it is not usable. You know what I mean, Donna?
There's actually no beach.
Right. You might see seawater.
And so the capital of Manchester is Mandeville.
We have 1 minute left of recording time left.
And that is naturally inland.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, bye all.
All right, good night. So, and thanks to everybody and all our listeners, and we hope you enjoyed the Labrish. So come back next week, and if you know someone from Hanover, bring them along, and let's see what we can dig up. So this is Margaret signing off, and hoping that you make it a great week, and you'll come back and visit with us next week. Thank you all, as we say in the South. Bye. Good night.